Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise, and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-Trim. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
Did have a good discussion with Prime Minister Maliki. It did nearly last for 2 hours. I talked about a lot of topics with him. One thing I was looking for was will.
You were looking for Will? Is Will lost?
Will! Will!
Just like those weapons of mass destruction, huh, Chuckle Nuts? Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thank you for tuning in tonight, joining us for a little fun and frivolity. Speaking of Chuckle Nuts, he met with German Chancellor Merkel last night. And miraculously abstained from the unnatural urge to give her an inappropriate shoulder rub. He did, however, answer some questions from reporters. We'll have some of that must-hear audio for you here in a few minutes. And then today, he announced some of his newly important way forward plan to reorganize Iraq. Yeah, a little, just like when you go see a film and they run the previews, right? Looks like he plans to play Twister with his Iraq policy members. That's the impression I get. It's the Iraq Shuffle, Truth Seekers. Are you ready to track the latest changes since Gates took over for the smirking bloodsucker Rumsfeldatu? Huh? Get out your graph. Get out your graph paper and protractor and get ready to make a flowchart. You ready? Okay, here we go. Death Squad boy John Negroponte moves to the State Department as Condi Valdez's deputy, while Mike McConnell picks up after Negroponte. McConnell becomes the new director of national intelligence. You remember that organization, right? Now, you still with me? Lieutenant General David Petraeus becomes the new U.S. commander in Iraq, who replacing General George Casey. And Admiral William Fallon will become the top U.S. commander in the Pacific and the head of Central Command or something. Fallon's post also covers Afghanistan and Iraq, which in doing so he replaces John Abizaid. It's amazing how any commander who speaks out against the Bush crime family's Iraq policy suddenly has the urge to retire. Remember Bush said, I'm going to listen to the commanders on the ground. And if the sons of bitches don't agree with me, they're out of there, and I'll bring in a couple who do. See, that's the part they didn't play on CNN. And then there's Ryan Crocker, who is the ambassador to Pakistan. He will now replace Zalmay Khalilzad as the ambassador to Iraq. It appears the Khalilzad, you see, is headed to replace the stapler-hurdling John Bolton at the UN. You're not confused, are you? Huh? Well, what do you expect? It's just the latest episode of SOAP, the Impeachable Offense Files. Well, a tell you what, you know, the Iraq policy, the idea of surging is in a position where it's not going to happen when you have a nutball, murderous psychopath. Really, I mean, he really is. When he was in the Naval Hospital in Bethesda back in the 70s, he slugged one into the chamber of his .45 and had a clip in the handle and ran screaming through the halls threatening to kill people. That's right, I'm talking about Oliver North. This was before Reagan, the Reagan administration gave him the job of being the military attaché to the National Security Advisor and set up all the murder and mayhem in Central America. So Oliver North, no less than Oliver North, a nutball if ever there was one, has come out in an essay at one of these right-wing websites. Which right-wing website is it? Damn. Well, I'm not sure. Conservativenews.com or something? I don't know. Oh, Human Events. Human Events. And he says adding 10 or 20,000 more U.S. combat troops, mostly soldiers and Marines, isn't going to improve Iraqi willingness to fight their own fight. An imperative we are to claim victory in this war, while putting 200,000 American or NATO troops on the Iranian and Syrian borders to stop infiltration might make sense. That's mission impossible, given the size of U.S. and allied armed forces. He goes on, but once Oliver North, who, Oliver North, you know, he's just like former Chief Justice Rehnquist, apparently a drug-crazed freak, kind of like Limbaugh. But once Oliver North comes out against troop involvement, well, that's it. You can pack up the tents and go home now. There's not going to be a surge, which is another word for escalation. They just don't, you know, at least back in the Vietnam blood years, they used to talk about escalation. Now they talk about surge, like it's a tidal surge or some kind of a sexual rush or something. It's incredible, something on your sewing machine. You know, this is not a surge, boys. It's escalation. We'll be covering that tonight. Oh, plus we have Uncle Mike's story corner tonight that I think you're going to find. It's going to be something from your childhood. So I think you're going to like it. We may do that here in about 20 minutes. All sorts of, no polkas tonight, but all sorts of fun and frivolity. Keith Ellison made history yesterday. He became the first Muslim member of Congress, and he took the ceremonial oath. See, the U.S. Constitution says no religious test to hold office at the federal level. And religious test means putting your hand on any sort of religious book and taking an oath. That's just not done. Some people take a ceremonial oath afterwards, photo op, as did Keith Ellison. And he put his hand on the Quran, once owned by Thomas Jefferson. Jesus, God. Boy, doesn't this make that freak from Virginia, Good? That was his name, Good. Virgil Good, Republican for Virginia, the one that warned that unless immigration is tightened, many more Muslims will be elected and follow Ellison's lead and take an oath on the Quran. Of course, Ellison was born here. Ellison was born in, I think he was born in Detroit. Anyway, he took his ceremonial oath with a Quran once owned by Thomas Jefferson. He said, quote, look at that, that's something else. And what he had was the Quran, two-volume Quran, which was published in London in 1764. So many of Ellison's family members attended the ceremony that was done in two takes. Now, Ellison said, first of all, he said he was glad it was over. He said earlier this week that he chose to use the Quran owned by Jefferson because it showed that a visionary like Thomas Jefferson believed that wisdom could be gleaned from many sources. And Ellison suggested he had gotten tired of the whole issue of his using the Quran. He said, quote, "It's good we did it. It's over. Now it's time to get down to business," end quote. Oh, Ellison's mother, Clyda Ellison, said in an interview that she thought any controversy over her son's choice was good, quote, "because many people in America are going to learn what the diversity of America is all about," end quote. And his mom is a practicing Catholic. She said, "I go to Mass every day." So there you have it. Oh, and a woman from Hawaii, a Democrat, Representative Mazie Hirono, is a Buddhist. She took she swore in the oath of office with no book at all, of course. She said she was raised in the Buddhist tradition, Representative Hirono, but doesn't actively practice the religion. She said, quote, "I don't have a book, but I certainly believe in the precepts of Buddhism and that of tolerance of other religions and integrity and honesty," unquote. So, there you have it. That's about all the swearing-in news we have for you. In an op-ed piece in USA Today, Virgil Goud wrote the other day, "I believe that if we do not stop illegal immigration totally, reduce legal immigration, and end diversity visas, we are leaving ourselves vulnerable to infiltration by those who want to mold the United States into the image of their religion rather than working within the Judeo-Christian principles that have made us a beacon for freedom-loving peace and persons, people, whatever, around the world." End quote.
Whispering to his aide-de-camp, "Be watchful for more hammers and don't it make you want to rock and roll all night long."
Tonight, how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Yeah, I hate him deeply, deeply. This is from the American Conservative, written by Philip Giraldi, who is a former CIA officer. And this is from an issue of American Conservative that is several months old. Title: Deep Background. "In Washington, it is hardly a secret that the same people in and around this administration who brought you Iraq are preparing to do the same for Iran. The Pentagon, acting under instructions from Vice President Dick Cheney's office, has tasked the United States Strategic Command, STRATCOM, with drawing up a contingency plan to be employed in response to another 9/11-type terrorist attack on the United States. The plan includes a large-scale air assault on Iran, employing both conventional and tactical nuclear weapons. Within Iran, there are more than 450 major strategic targets, including numerous suspected nuclear weapons program development sites. Many of the targets are hardened or are deep underground and could not be taken out by conventional weapons, hence the nuclear option. As in the case of Iraq, the response is not conditional on Iran actually being involved in the act of terrorism directed against the United States. Several senior Air Force officers involved in the planning are reportedly appalled at the implications of what they are doing, that Iran is being set up for an unprovoked nuclear attack." Iran is being set up for an unprovoked nuclear attack. "But no one is prepared to damage his career by posing any objections. A CIA internal review of the agency's performance prior to 9/11 is harshly critical." This is all right. This is something else. There's a couple of short pieces here. The other one. This is right after Negroponte came back from Iraq. "There is increasing evidence that the Iraqi police forces, now under Shiite control, are carrying out systematic revenge killings against Sunnis in Baghdad. The bodies now showing up at the morgue have obvious signs of handcuffing and blindfolding and evidence of being tortured before death. U.S. sources indicate that the suspicious killings have reached the rate of almost 1,000 a month. The police are supervised by the Shiite-run Ministry of Interior, which claims that the killings are being carried out by insurgents wearing stolen police uniforms. But American intelligence sources disagree, noting that many of the killers appear to be actual policemen, carrying the expensive standard-issue Glock automatics and driving official Toyota Land Cruisers. Now, we mentioned a couple of times on this program, back when Negroponte was given the temporary assignment of going to Iraq as the ambassador and training these people in death squadism, the fact that this is what Negroponte does. In the past couple of days, he seems to have been demoted from Director of National Intelligence to Assistant Secretary or whatever, I guess it would be Assistant Secretary of State under Condoleezza Rice. Demotion, dismotion, that's not what these guys are all about. They don't give a damn. These are not career Foreign Service officers, Negroponte, who are interested in making the alumni back at Princeton proud of what they've done as they made the world safe for the expansion of capitalism. No. These are people of an entirely different breed. These are killers and murderers. Negroponte and Cheney and so many of these people, Bolton, it just goes on and on. Oliver North, who else? Poindexter. These people would have been extremely comfortable in the German high command in the 30s and 40s. These are real killers. These are people who have no respect. They are not doing it to open up markets for capitalism. They are not doing it to advance freedom and justice. They are doing it because they are basically, at their cores, murderers. They're killers. And it's great fun to these people to engineer the deaths of tens, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, and in Negroponte's case, of course, hundreds of thousands of people without leaving your desk. By moving Negroponte to become this poor, hapless Condoleezza Rice's assistant is just laughable in its proposition. Absolutely laughable. Negroponte becomes the spear tip now. I got an email from somebody today that said, if I were Hugo Chavez, I would hire a food taster real quick. The State Department now is going to become another arena within which murder and terrorism will be delivered to the rest of the world. Prior to Negroponte moving into this office, you can make the argument that while the State Department may have greased the path, that the actual killing and overthrows and disruptions and the real bad stuff was carried out by CIA, DIA, NSA, all sorts of alphabetized hit squads, terrorist organizations within the United States government. And, you know, the State Department was like, we're above that. Not any longer. Not with Negroponte making the move. Negroponte now has the office of the Department of State to run interference for his killings.
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour, got an email from Reg over at TVNewsLies.org where for a donation to the website, you can get a copy of Loose Change 2. If you've not seen that DVD, you should. Anyway, Reg wrote, Mike, earlier today we received a very nice donation at TVNewsLies.org and a request for a copy of Loose Change 2. The APO on the shipping address showed that the donor was in Baghdad. And that was a bit heart-stopping in itself. But in a space that asked for comments from our donors, the young man had written, God save us all. And that just did it for me. All I could do was respond on the forum with the words, please come back safe. I'm so moved that one of our troops would want to view the DVD while on duty, but I'm so saddened by the reality of what the madman is putting them through. When do we rise up and stop him? I don't know, Reg. But I do know that we haven't had an Uncle Mike Story Corner since, I don't know, since we started with Nova M, I don't think. It's something we do periodically. And we're going to do it right now. This is something from your childhood. And it'll be familiar to you. Gather round, kiddies. It's time for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Got your jammies on? Everybody comfortable tonight? Well, good. Test, 1, 2, test. 3, 2, 1. One golden spring day, a young girl named Alice was sitting by the river listening to her sister read aloud from a history book. At least that's what Alice was supposed to be doing. Instead, she was playing with Dinah, her cat, which was more fun. I wish you could talk back to me, Dinah, she said. I'm sure you would have many interesting things to say. The sun was so bright and the air was so warm that Alice was soon daydreaming. Slowly, her head began to nod. She snapped to attention, however, when a large white rabbit went dashing by. Strangely, he was wearing a waistcoat and a bow tie and carrying a huge pocket watch. Even more strangely, he was talking to himself. I'm late, I'm late, for a very important date, the white rabbit muttered as he went along. In a flash, Alice was on her feet, chasing after him. Still fretting, the rabbit took a giant hop into a hollow tree, exclaiming, Oh, my fur and whiskers, I'm late, I'm late, I'm late. Alice thought that he might be late for a party, so she followed him into the tree. Suddenly Alice stumbled, then tumbled head over heels into a deep hole. After a while, instead of falling faster, she began to fall slower and slower until she was floating more than falling. Alice landed gently, just in time to see the rabbit's white puff of a tail disappear behind a tiny door. Since she was too big to follow the white rabbit, Alice wandered off by herself. Alice soon discovered that she had entered a strange and wondrous land. It was full of the oddest creatures she had ever seen. There were talking birds and walking fish. There was also a Cheshire cat with the widest of grins who kept appearing and disappearing, and sometimes only the cat's grin could be seen. Alice thought the creatures all seemed quite at home in this topsy-turvy wonderland. She hoped one of them could help her find the white rabbit, but they were no help at all. Alice walked through a forest and came across a pair of roly-poly twins. Their names were written on their collars. I see that you are Tweedledee and Tweedledum, she greeted them. When first meeting someone, you should shake hands and state your name and business, said Tweedledum, grabbing Alice's hand. That's manners, said Tweedledee, grabbing her other hand. With that, the tubby twins danced Alice round and swept her off her feet, but they were so rough that they flipped her over and knocked her onto her back. Alice was not amused. Talk about manners! Alice exclaimed as she picked herself up and brushed herself off. If you must know, my name is Alice, and I'm following the white rabbit. I'm very sorry, but I must go. Despite the twins' protests, Alice went on her way. Soon she came to an unusual garden. Flitting about were bread and butterflies and a rocking horsefly. Then Alice discovered that the flowers of Wonderland could speak.
What kind of flower are you? A big red rose asked her.
Oh, I'm not any kind of flower, Alice replied.
No fragrance,
a daisy said, sniffing at Alice's hair. But I'm not a flower, Alice repeated.
Just as I suspected, the rose cried. She's nothing but a common weed. Leave, shouted all the flowers together. We don't want you in our lovely garden.
Alice was forced to run away. Near the garden, Alice saw a familiar grin up in a tree. It was the Cheshire Cat. When the rest of him appeared, Alice said, Have you seen the white rabbit?
No, said the Cheshire Cat. But if I were looking for him, I'd look... For the Mad Hatter.
Oh, I'm not sure I want to visit a mad person, said Alice.
You can't avoid it, said the cat. Mostly everyone here is mad.
And with that, the cat began to disappear. When the cat had completely disappeared, Alice realized that he hadn't told her how to find the Mad Hatter. As she wandered on, she saw two road signs pointing in the same direction. One read, Mad Hatter, and the other read, March Hare. Alice still had no wish to meet a Mad Hatter, but she hoped the March Hare might know the mysterious White Rabbit, too. Alice followed the signs to a clearing in the woods where the Mad Hatter was giving a tea party.
No room, the Mad Hatter howled as Alice plopped down in one of the many chairs around the table.
But there's plenty of room, Alice protested.
Perhaps, the March Hare admitted, but it's very rude to sit down without first being invited. the hatter in the hair then proceeded to make Alice feel quite unwelcome. They not only refused to give her any tea, but it was clear that they had no intention of helping her find the white rabbit. So once again, Alice set off on her own. Alice soon came across one of the strangest creatures she'd meet in this very strange land, the Queen of Hearts. Though the queen was dressed like an ordinary queen in an ordinary deck of cards, she was most regal as she ordered her subjects around. The queen was playing an odd game of croquet. The wickets were cards, the balls were hedgehogs, and the mallets were flamingos. When the queen invited Alice to play, she thought it might be fun, but it wasn't. Alice's flamingo refused to cooperate, and the queen turned out to be a terrible sport. "Off with his head!" she cried the minute anyone displeased her. Alice considered leaving the game since she very much wanted to keep her head, but she also wanted to meet the white rabbit, who she felt was very near indeed. As it turned out, Alice did see the white rabbit. He was working for the queen. Alice was just about to introduce herself to him when the Cheshire Cat made another of his unannounced appearances. Alice watched in horror as the mischievous cat tripped up the queen and then promptly disappeared, and when the queen turned accusing eyes on Alice, crying, "Off with her head!" Alice decided it was time for her, too, to disappear. Without so much as a hello or a goodbye to the white rabbit, Alice took off into the woods. Faster and faster she ran till she tripped headlong over a root and once more found herself whirling and swirling through time and space. "Please wake up, Alice," she heard a soft voice say. Alice awoke with a start back on the riverbank. Dinah the cat was curled up in her lap. "You've been dreaming," said Alice's sister. "Oh, dear," Alice cried. "I must have fallen asleep while you were reading to me." "It's been a long day," said her sister. "No wonder you're tired. Why don't we just go home now and have our tea?" I seem to have lost my taste for tea," Alice said, recalling the Mad Hatter's tea party. "But I certainly would like to go home." Alice's sister gave her a puzzled look. Then she took Alice's hand, and they walked home together. Isn't that one of your favorites? Huh? Thanks to Teddy Slater, and my apologies to Lewis Carroll. 3-2-1 indeed. Whew. You can draw your own conclusions. I just felt that the other night I was reading this to Molly. Very, very, very abbreviated and abridged version of Alice in Wonderland, the kind of story you read to your kid before she goes to sleep. And as I was reading it, I kept getting images of Bush and Chaney. Chaney is the Cheshire Cat. So speaking of Lewis Carroll and the Mad Hatter and the March Hare, and, of course, let's not forget the Dormouse, but the Dormouse was not in this particular version. Let's try to recap the Bush crime family's moves here in the past few days. Death Squad boy John Negroponte moves to the State Department as Condi Valdez's deputy, while his former deputy, Mike McConnell, takes over, becoming the new director of national intelligence, which is the organization that will open your mail and listen on your phone calls and hack into your computer. Lieutenant General David Petraeus replaces General George Casey as the new U.S. commander in Iraq. And the reason he is replacing Casey, of course, is because George said, "I listen to my commanders on the ground." And his commanders on the ground in Iraq have been saying, "No surge, we need to get out of here." So you get rid of the commanders. Admiral William Fallon will now become the top U.S. commander in the Pacific and the head of Central Command, replacing John Abizade, who is, retiring. And finally, there is Ryan Crocker, who is the current ambassador to Pakistan. And he'll replace Zalmay Khalilzad, who used to be our ambassador to Afghanistan, but is now the ambassador to Iraq, and who is one of the consultants for Unocal Oil Company. Khalilzad, who is no longer the ambassador to Iraq, will now head to the United Nations to replace the Mad Hatter, John Bolton,
as U.S. ambassador. And, of course, Rumsfeld is out and Gates is in. Can you follow that? But this is how Bush listens to his commanders on the ground. Remember, every time he has been asked in the past several weeks since his ass was handed to him by the American public in the last election, he's answered the question about when he's going to make his announcement by saying, well, I'll listen to my commanders on the ground, and then I'll make my announcement. Another murderous, filthy example of this man's inability to lead anything.
One pill makes you larger, and one pill makes you smaller.
Former Chief Justice Rehnquist's favorite song.
Mother gives you.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 8 minutes before the hour. Back in the day, I never really did any. Ingested, I should say, any pharmaceutical drugs other than what the hell were they? The 714s. Oh my God, that's how long ago it's been.
Isn't that some sort of weapon? That's an M16.
That's an M16.
You're talking about Quaaludes?
Yeah. But I had friends who did all kinds of strange drugs, and one of the more vicious was Placidil. It used to be referred to as Jelly Bellies. People come up to us in the club, you want to buy some Jelly Bellies? No. Not Jelly Bellies. The FBI has 2 days ago released 1,500 pages of documents on former Chief Justice William Rehnquist. The release was made as a result of a Freedom of Information Act request by the Associated Press. Remember, Rehnquist died a year and a half ago. An additional 207 pages have been withheld under the federal disclosure law, and the FBI said an entire section could not be found. According to the information, Chief Justice William Rehnquist was a Placidil addict. Now, I didn't know such a thing could happen. It is a sedative hypnotic drug. The withdrawal is... really rough. From what I understand, withdrawal symptoms can include convulsions and hallucinations and memory loss and all sorts of bad things. Now, the company that made this junk stopped making it in 1999 because, like so many drugs that came out in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, these drugs were just vicious, vicious, murderous drugs. And besides, we have the SSIs now, so... don't need these anymore. But like Oliver North, like SSRI, I'm sorry, or whatever the hell it is, the serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Anyway, like Oliver North, like Rush Limbaugh, now we find out that Chief Justice William Rehnquist, boy, can you tell me why so many hardcore right-wing Republicans turn out to be junkies, addicts, have secret sex lives, child molesters. My God. The late Strom Thurmond was chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee in 1986 when Rehnquist was nominated to be Chief Justice. And an assistant attorney general at the time under Reagan was John Bolton. Bolton was given the names of people who would testify for the Democrats against Rehnquist, with a directive to Bolton, find out what these bastards are going to say. This is a good Christian man. The fact that he's a goddamn junkie doesn't mean that much, but find out what they're going to say. Well, Bolton immediately went to the FBI to find out what was going to be said and discredit everything that was going to be said. As a matter of fact, the testimony was not included about Rehnquist's drug addiction. Rehnquist apparently had taken Placidil for 10 years. Oh, my God. You don't take Placidil for 10 years and retain an ability to think. I'm sorry, it can't be done. When Rehnquist checked into a hospital in 1981 for a week-long stay, doctors stopped administering the drug for a while, causing what a hospital spokesman at the time said was, quote, a disturbance in his mental clarity, end quote. Yeah, okay. The FBI file, citing one of his physicians, said Rehnquist experienced withdrawal symptoms that included trying to escape the facility and discerning changes in the patterns on the hospital curtains. He also heard voices outside his room discussing plots against him. Bruh! A huge section of this file is still classified. Now, Darren from North Carolina sent me an email, said, if Rehnquist was hospitalized and addicted to drugs, wouldn't you think that every case he heard on the Supreme Court, especially during that time frame, should be automatically reheard? Darren goes on to say, perhaps this is why this story is slowly dying, if it was ever truly alive at all in the mainstream media. I mean, Darren writes, can you imagine the constitutional mess that would ensue if we had to revisit Bush v. Gore? Holy jumping Christ. I can't. It just never stops, does it? It never, 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 ever, ever stops with Republicans. Now, Rehnquist, of course, you remember, this came out during his confirmation hearings in 86. He owned a house out in one of the western states, I'm drawing a blank, Arizona, New Mexico, I don't know. It had a covenant that the house could never be sold to any non-white. That covenant had been established in the House like in 1971. 1986, when this was brought out in the confirmation hearings, Rehnquist said, oh, I just heard about that the other day. About the same time I saw those huge rabbits coming into the doctor's office with knives and guns and a rope. Oh, Jesus, let me out of here. But I do want to be the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. Does anybody have any objections? Welcome back. It's about 6:30 past the hour. Did you see this bit? I don't mean this bit. It was a piece in the newspaper. Oh, God, now I feel awful. It's from the Houston Chronicle. A 10-year-old boy who apparently was mimicking the execution of Saddam Hussein accidentally hanged himself on New Year's Eve. Webster, Texas police were called to a apartment on Nassau Parkway about 7:30 p.m. on Sunday and found the boy dead. The boy's mother told police he had watched a report on Saddam's death on a Telemundo news broadcast before he hanged himself. The police investigator says it appears to be accidental. Our gut reaction is that he was experimenting. His uncle questioned why television news had to broadcast the former Iraqi dictator's death. The uncle And another uncle and the young boy were watching this, and the boy asked what led to the former leader's execution. And one of the uncles told him it was because Saddam was real bad. The kid said, okay, and that was it, according to the uncles. The mother left for work the afternoon of December 31st, and the young boy and other youngsters were being watched by another uncle while other parents were preparing food for a New Year's party. At one point, the children noticed that the 10-year-old was gone, went to the bedroom where he was found dead. The boy had tied a slip knot around his neck while on a bunk bed. He was a fifth grader at Clear Lake City Elementary School. The uncle said, I don't think he thought it was real. They showed them putting the noose around his neck over and over and over. Why show that on television? And Saddam's execution also apparently influenced a 9-year-old boy in Pakistan. The Agence France-Presse reported that boy hanged himself from a ceiling fan while reenacting Saddam's death with the help of his 10-year-old sister. Wow. Bush welcomed the German chancellor to the United States. I'm not sure why she's here. It's none of my business, really. I don't know. After meeting with the chancellor, Raisenbrain made an attempt to answer some reporters' questions. This reporter wanted to know about Bush's long video phone session with Prime Minister Maliki, presumably to tell him that a surge was a-coming. Here come the surge, the reporter says. Mr. President, you spoke for nearly 2 hours today with Iraq's prime minister. Do you both agree now on the need to send more U.S. troops to Iraq to deal with the rising violence in that country?
My thinking is taking shape. I'll be ready to outline a strategy that will help the Iraqis achieve the objective of a country that can govern, sustain, and defend itself sometimes next week. I've still got consultations to go through. Whatever decision I make, though, will be all aimed at achieving our objective. Did have a good discussion with Prime Minister Maliki. It did nearly last for 2 hours. I talked about a lot of topics with him. One thing I was looking for was will, you know, to determine whether or not he has the will necessary to do the hard work to protect his people. And I told him, I said, that you show the will, we will help you. And that's, I'm in the process of making up my final decision as to what to recommend, what recommendations to accept.
Unbelievable. Yeah, this is our commander-in-chief hard at work in the never-ending position of commander-in-chief and chief diplomat and just trying to solve problems. He says, I told Maliki, you show the will, we will help you. Oh, okay. Otherwise, we'll just invade and decimate your nation and kill your people and then leave you in chaos. Your choice, dude. Jesus, God. I talk about a lot of topics with him. Found out his favorite toothpaste. No, he doesn't use the kind that Tony uses. You show the will, we'll help you. Otherwise, we got 140,000 troops there, and they'll just continue to get killed, and we'll continue to kill, and everybody will continue to kill. Have you got any will, huh? Maliki? What the hell is your name? Why don't you have a real name? Then Mensah Man had these words of wisdom about Saddam's execution. The reporter said, Mr. President, you mentioned that you see national reconciliation as a crucial goal there for your policy. Why then haven't you condemned the taunting that Saddam Hussein faced on the gallows from Shiite officials? Do you have a personal reaction?
My personal reaction is that Saddam Hussein was given a trial that he was unwilling to give the thousands of people he killed. He was given a fair trial, something he was unwilling to give thousands of Iraqi citizens who he brutalized. I wish, obviously, that the proceedings had been gone, in a more dignified way. But nevertheless, He was given justice. The thousands of people he killed were not.
Well, then, Mr. President, do you have any comments considering the copycat suicides among kids around the world? Anything you want to say, Mr. Bush? Anything? Mr. Bush! So what has Bush learned from his European allies? That the UN is important. Wow! You see, this German reporter then says, Mr. President, the debate always is how can European powers influence a superpower like the United States? Whether Germany objected to Iraq or Tony Blair agreed with you on Iraq, they had not much influence in the final decision to invade. Can you give us an example where you changed your mind on a foreign policy decision after talking to a European leader? Otherwise, what's the point to a new European-U.S. meeting on Iraq?
I don't know if I'd call this change of mind, but one thing that my European friends have taught me is that the United Nations is an important body in order to be able to convince parliaments of hard work that needs to be done.
What?
For example, getting resolutions on Iraq at the United Nations is important for a country like Denmark or Holland in order for them to go to their parliaments and say we have UN approval.
What?
I, as you probably are aware, I really never felt like the United States needs to get United Nations approval to make decisions necessary for our security. And so there's an area, for example, where I have been taught a lesson by my allies and friends. The United States needs to have good relations with Europe. The relations between Europe and the United States are vital.
Really?
And sometimes the relations can be difficult. Not every country agrees throughout Europe.
Not every country agrees throughout Europe to let you kill anybody you want to, Mr. Reporter. Not every country agrees in Europe that murder innocent civilians and it's okay to obliterate an ancient civilization. Gee, I wonder what's wrong with him. Jesus Christ, I mean, we're the United States. I'm George Bush. You know, God tells me to do this stuff, and then I got to deal with the Hollanders, the Dutches, are those Denmark people. What do they speak over there, reindeer? I got to deal with little crappy ass. No, I don't think so. Denmark, Schmenmark. What's Denmark? That ain't nothing. I'm from Texas. I think Rehnquist was there a couple of times. At least part of him was. It's just insane. I mean, it's really mad. It is exactly like the Mad Hatter's Tea Party. Exactly. I defy you to tell me the difference. Any of you right-wing numbskulls want to call in tonight and try to explain to us liberals the difference between the Bush crime family and the Mad Hatter's Tea Party? I always say that, and then one of these twits calls in and I wind up taking out the fish gutting knife, so to speak. All right, your phone calls when we come back. Your phone calls when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Yo, bring it on down.
As you know, Vladimir Putin and I have got a good personal relationship. This is a vital and important relationship, and the relationship's an important relationship, and I would call the relationship a good relationship.
I don't speak reindeer. What kind of talk is this one now? What is this? Is this Mexican? 21 past the hour. As promised, let's go to your calls. The number here is 800-989-1480. Chad is calling from Minneapolis. Hey, Chad.
Hey, sir.
Hey, Chad.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Actually feeling a strange feeling I haven't ever known in my life. I feel like I'm represented from my district.
You feel like what?
I feel like I'm represented from my district.
You feel like you're represented. You mean, I'm not sure I follow you, Chad.
Mr. Keith Ellison, actually.
What about Keith Ellison?
And he's symbolic. I mean, he takes the high road with it. You know, everything they throw him with their bigotry and their racism, totally. I mean, he says, hey, look, Jefferson, you know, Jefferson was a cultured man.
Oh, I get it. You live in Ellison's district, and he is now your member. Okay, I didn't understand any of that. I'm sorry. It's Friday night, and I've had too many Placidils this week. All right. So Ellison is your member of Congress, and and you feel good about that. Why?
Well, because his response to the whole Koran debacle was to pull Jefferson's Koran from the archives.
Yeah.
And use it in a ceremonial swearing-in.
Right.
Essentially, he said that it demonstrated the religious tolerance, how it dates back to the foundation of our country.
Yeah,
and in a way, what the point I wanted to make, that would be almost the biblical way to handle the situation. You know, like Christ would demonstrate in such a way.
Well, I'm gonna have to disagree with you there. When you say biblical, if you're referring to the New Testament, okay, maybe Jesus taught a little bit about tolerance, but the Jews and the Muslims way back and the Hindus would you know pretty quickly kill you if you know there's no tolerance back then. Go back and read Exodus. Read about God's orders to Joshua, you know, after Moses led the Israelites in the desert for 40 years, that wasn't good enough for God. He was still pissed off about something. So he said, you're not going. So he had Joshua go, and Joshua was instructed to go across the River Jordan and murder everybody.
Yeah, I've
so there's no tolerance.
You know,
no tolerance.
I, and,
what?
I mean, he torched Jonah, you know.
What?
He tortured Jonah, so.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, Chad, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, pal. You have a good weekend. Patrick is checking in from Texas. Hey, Patrick. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. I just wanted to call. You know, I have never listened to your show before, and I'm sorry that I waited so long not hearing it. Bless your heart. It is about time somebody actually put a point on a point you can't put too finely. Thank you for expressing yourself exactly the way you did earlier about Bush and his cronies.
Okay, well, I'm glad you found the program. I've been doing this for a lot of years. How are you listening?
I'm on Sirius. I'll tell you what happened. Just before the election, you know, I was tuning in to this station, I guess it's 146 on Sirius.
Right.
And, you know, I was really enjoying what I was hearing. People were worked up. Mad about you know, the voting machine, just any number of issues.
Right.
And then right after the elections, it just ended. And I ended up calling. I don't remember the morning show, but the guy had just rolled over, and I could see his soft underbelly. It stopped us completely. We need to build relations with the Republicans and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, of course, because it's subscription radio, I was free to tell him exactly what I thought of that turnaround. But, I'm understanding that you are broadcasting openly on public airwaves, correct?
That's right. Nova M Radio Network and Sirius picks us up, bless their hearts, so that people traveling, no matter where you're traveling, all you have to do is go to Sirius 146, and there we are.
That's where I found you, and I was tuning in and thought, well, you know, I'll listen for a little while, see what the latest, see what the trend is now. And then I heard you calling him a criminal, comparing him to Nazis, and you're so right. I don't know how it is that most of us, many of us in America, don't see the parallels, and the you know basically the hijacking of the American of our democracy, bastardization of our Constitution.
Absolutely. It's going on. Patrick, listen, now that you found the program, we're on every night, 9 to midnight Eastern Time. I hope we're going to hear from you again. We've got to take a break here, but I'm glad you found the program, Patrick, and I hope you call in again. Take care, okay?
Yeah, well, Mike, I just my reason for calling was to say thank you, and yes, I will be hunting you down on the dial.
All right, sir. All right, take care. Drive safely.
Absolutely. Thank you. Rainbow every day and tell the world that everything's okay. But I'll try to carry off a little darkness on my back till things...
We're still at war. It's in our country's interest to find those who would do harm to us and get them out of harm's way.
What? The soundbite we played for you just a moment ago of Bush responding to the question about Saddam Hussein being taunted as he faced his step into the infinite. And Bush's obvious kind of ticked off attitude when he was asked the question. Well, Eleanor, who writes to us occasionally from behind the soybean curtain, writes, why is his reaction so surprising? All you have to think of is Carla Faye Tucker. That says it all. And sociopaths don't, quote, grow out of it, end quote. And, of course, what she's referring to was the woman convicted of murdering her husband, boyfriend, with a pickaxe. Yeah, just, in Texas, just... Whew. And she was on convicted. She was on death row, and she had a conversion, became an evangelical Christian, and practically every leading light in the evangelical world requested when Bush was governor that he grant her clemency, or not clemency, but commuter sentence from execution to life in prison without parole. And she had started a prison ministry and was doing what the evangelicals in this country figured was really what Jesus would have done. And Bush is not a Christian. I don't care what he says. He's not a Christian. He mocks evangelicals, even worse than I do, because he strokes them with one hand and flails them with the other. That sort of thing. The hypocrisy. There's no hypocrisy on my part. Well, not about that issue, but Bush defines hypocrisy where it concerns his attitude about evangelical Christians. And Carla Faye Tucker, through her attorney, made a request for clemency, and of course Bush turned it down. And all the leading lights in the evangelical community made a plea for her, citing Christ's admonition to forgive and to turn the other cheek and so on and so forth. Although evangelical leaders are very selective in doing that, aren't they? But that's not the reason I'm telling the story. Evangelical leaders to me are also hypocrites. But it was Bush who mocked her, and he did it in that little whiny, his imitation of a whiny little girl voice. Oh, don't kill me, don't kill me. I'm a Christian. Don't kill me, don't kill me. And he and his chief of staff, which I think at the time was Karl Rove, had a huge laugh about Carla Faye Tucker's plea for clemency.
Oh, don't kill me. Don't kill me. Oh, I'm Jesus's little girl. Don't kill me.
That was Bush. Now, once it became common knowledge that's the type of crazed individual he is. I mean, that's not what you expect from an adult male. I don't care. Unless the adult male is truly a sociopath, then you expect that. But at the time, he was governor. So, I don't know. Thanks, Eleanor, from behind the soybean curtain. Back to your phone calls. What's this? Samantha and Alan calling from Alameda, California. Hi, I have two people on the phone?
Yes.
Well, hello. Sounds just like one.
Hi.
Oh, yeah, there she is. Hi, you must be Alan? No, you're Samantha.
Yeah, I'm Samantha.
Hi, Samantha.
Samantha's 9 years old.
Hey, 9 years. I remember when I was 9 years old.
Samantha listens to you every night with me.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. Samantha, don't pay any attention to the bad words I say, please.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Don't. I mean, you know, sometimes I get, you know, carried away.
Yeah.
Well, what did you call? You sound like you have a cold?
Oh, no.
Oh, you don't?
I think she's nervous, Mike.
All right. You're nervous? Okay. Well, did you want to talk about anything, Samantha?
Well, clear your voice.
Well, I know that half of my class really doesn't like Bush, but I'm pretty sure my teacher does.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We really like listening to you, and we don't like Bush at all. And, yeah.
Well, that's, let's see, you're in fourth grade?
Yeah, fourth grade.
Let's see, when I was 9 years old, let me think back. Give me just a second here. When I was your age, there was a guy that was still president named, Harry Truman. Huh?
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll study him when you maybe get in sixth or seventh or eighth grade, but Harry Truman was president. And the only reason I know that is because I found out when I grew up. I'm amazed that you are as articulate about your feelings about Bush as you are, Samantha.
Yeah, my dad kind of trained me to do that.
Your dad trained you to do it. So your daddy is letting you understand that there are good politicians and bad politicians?
Yep. In fact, in third grade, my teacher said I was the most political person in the class.
Well, bless your heart. Is it difficult being political when you're nine?
Yeah.
Well, she just got elected to student council, Mike.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you run on the Green Party ticket or what?
Yeah.
just kidding, Sam. It's probably nonpartisan in your school, right? You just run. You run for the
office.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably my fault because I expose her to a lot of political events. She's gone to lots of political events.
I know a lot of political people.
She's met Barbara Lee on numerous occasions. And what does Barbara always say to you?
That I should be the first woman president.
That's really great. Samantha, you're very, very fortunate to have parents expose you to the political process because a lot of kids that doesn't happen until they get older, and I think it's really good that you understand. I mean, what the heck, you're an American, so you should know, right?
Yeah.
Do you ever get into discussions with other kids, where you have a certain position, they have a different position?
Sometimes.
And what happens?
We start yelling at each other, and our teachers yell at us.
That sounds like me. That's what I do, Samantha, which speaks volumes about my emotional development, right? Have you got a bird there?
Yes, we do. He's kind of annoying.
What is your bird's name?
His name is Ricky.
Ricky. Is it a cockatiel?
Yes, it's a cockatiel.
I'll be darned. Well, I sort of thought it sounded like one. Not that I'm, all that... hip up on bird sounds, but I just thought it sounded like a cockatiel. So what are you doing this weekend?
My dad owns an antique show, and I'm going there.
Oh, that is really nice.
Well, Mike, she's exposed to all of this political discussions all the time because we operate the Grand Lake Theater in Oakland, California, and we're well known for posting anti-Bush messages on the marquee, which we've been doing since the day the Supreme Court stole the election, stopped our votes from being counted, and we're sort of notorious for that.
That's right.
What did you think about the news today? I don't know if you heard it, Alan, but the news that Rehnquist had been on Placidil
I had not heard it until you were talking about it, and that would certainly explain part of his twisted decision there.
Oh,
I'm of the philosophy that our elections have been systematically stolen ever since that time, and it's been getting worse and worse and worse. And I'm truly hoping now that in this new Congress coming in, that we'll see some oversight, that we'll see some subpoenas, and that someone will have the courage to come forward from Diebold or one of these other manufacturers of this fraudulent election equipment so that we can actually get a true understanding of what has happened to our elections in this country. And I hope if this is exposed that perhaps there is a legal process that could be used to overturn all of his appointments and much of what has been done. I'm hopeful for the future so that my child can grow up in an America that is an America that we believe in and is something that we had as children ourselves.
Oh, man. Yeah, I agree. I agree. I had a friend here in Atlanta. He's since gone. He had an Italian restaurant. He had a huge marquee out front where he put he was kind of a left libertarian, kind of drifting towards the Democrats. But he used to put all kinds of anti-Bush political sayings up. Tell me, you say you put them up on the marquee on your theater. Do you have a favorite? Do you change them every week?
We change them every week. We haven't had them up for a couple of weeks. We've sort of been waiting to see what the new Congress does before attacking them for their inaction. There's a wonderful, you can find them on by Googling Grand Lake Theater Marquee.
Grand Lake Theater Marquee.
Marquee. And all sorts of stuff will come up on Google. There's a Flickr website that has lots of them on there. My personal favorite is congratulations to Dick Cheney and Halliburton on your glorious financial victory in Iraq.
Oh my God!
We got a lot of comments on that.
I just got a quick email from Marianne Darling who says in the subject line, "San Jose loves the Grand Theater." So
we're pretty well known. We have political fundraisers on a regular basis. We've had Mark Crispin Miller speak there two or three times. We've had David Ray Griffin there a number of times.
Wow.
Barbara Lee uses the theater for her local town hall meetings.
And my dad has wanted you to come there to speak.
Well, I would love to at some point, Samantha. I may be making a trip out the West Coast because we do have stations out there who carry the program. Hey, listen, you hear that music, Samantha?
Yeah.
That means we have to take a break. I'm so glad you called.
Keep up the good work, Mike. We love you.
Yeah.
All right, and tell Ricky I said goodnight, okay?
Okay.
All right, Samantha.
Good night, Ricky. Goodbye. Good night, Mark.
Take care. Thanks, Alan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And your day screaming with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour with Mike Malloy and Samantha. That reminds me, we're going to have to do Young People's Night to get on this. We haven't done it in a long time. Never done it on Nova AM. We'll have to do it one of these times.
Oh, absolutely. Especially if Samantha will call back with Ricky. Now, I was just reminded when he was talking about when Alan, her dad there, was talking about his marquee at the Grand Lake Theater about our favorite old little coffee shop that closed down that we used to go to every night before the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I loved this place, and they had great coffee, and it was a bunch of college kids probably who went to Emory University and had a marquee up there where different coffee selections would change, you know, relatively frequently, and we're looking down the choices one day. Okay, let's see. They got a peppermint latte, and they got a coconut.
Yeah, and the huge marquee behind the counter where they listed all the drinks.
All the drinks. So you're looking down the list.
Hundreds
one day,
of them.
I'm going to try something different today. I'm going to try it. So all the way down, and in little tiny letters in the middle of the marquee, you really had to squint to see it. It was like sandwiched between two specialty drinks. It said, "Bush is going to kill us all."
I remember that.
It was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
There are a lot of, I think a lot of theater majors worked in that coffee house. And this is just a couple of years ago when we were, when we had the old studio. And I went in there one day before the show and it was gone. And I asked the very interesting looking person behind the counter, what happened to that Bush is going to get, oh, well, boss made us take it down. Somebody complained. Back to your phone calls. Lee is calling from Vancouver, British Columbia. Hey, Lee.
Yeah. Is this Mike?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah. I was just calling. I'm an American living in Canada. Today, Dick Cheney gave America the most blatant signal that there will be a terrorist attack in America.
You get that feeling too, huh?
Oh, yeah, yeah. When he gave that order to the Pentagon, you know, I sat here and when I heard that, I said, I can't believe that they've become that bold in terms of basically telling America there will be a terrorist attack.
Is it being bold or is it being desperate? And maybe there's no difference, but...
I think that that's all the prelude to something. You know, when 9/11 occurred, I was telling friends here that I was afraid that that the administration was behind the attack,
mm-hmm.
and that that was merely the first step in Bush or a cabal making a move to basically seize control of the American government.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like, it's proceeding apace. I couldn't believe what I heard today. Just couldn't believe it.
Yeah, the fact that we have sent two naval battle groups to the Persian Gulf now has an awful lot of people on edge. I try not to think about it. Literally try not to think about it because I would just go right out of my crawl space. If we have two, we have the USS Eisenhower there, I believe, battle group, and now they're sending the battle group named after the senator from Mississippi, the John C. Stennis, I believe it is. So now that one's going, and the United States has done this many times as just a show of force to let people in the region know, hey, if we want to, we can turn your country into glass. But on the other hand, when you realize your country is in the hands of madmen like Bush and Cheney and Negroponte and the rest of these people, yeah, it's unnerving. I don't know what the hell is about to happen, Lee.
There's provocation going on. I mean, according to Seymour Hersh, they've been operating in Iran for almost a year now. Special forces have been doing various things. And it seems like they're, into a definite, move to provoke Iran to attack one of those battle groups. Or, as Cheney has indicated, that there will be a terrorist attack in America.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting here watching. I can't believe that they're doing this.
I know. It leaves me with the same sense that it probably leaves you, one of impotent rage. I don't know what to do.
While I was there, I left in 72. Yeah. And I was an anti-war protester, a militant, black mm-hmm. power advocate, as they say.
Right.
And there were times I left when friends of mine started getting killed. Captain Bill Brower, who was one of the Black Panthers in San Francisco, who was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And, people were dying all around me. And, I just felt absolutely powerless,
Yeah.
And the city, I'm from Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
The city was going completely pot, but it was more cocaine.
Right, right.
Watching things just fall apart. But then to come here and to sit here and to watch and see what's happening in the country and knowing that there's nothing I could stop it,
mm-hmm.
I feel powerless.
Why did you choose to move to British Columbia?
Oh, because it's beautiful. I moved first to Toronto, lived
uh-huh.
there for 17 years, and then moved out to BC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just couldn't, after leaving, I've heard you speak about leaving.
Mm-hmm.
After leaving, I left because my wife was pregnant with my first son.
Mm-hmm.
After leaving, it was really hard to go back.
I hear you. Well, how do you listen to this program?
Oh, I listen to it on the internet.
On the internet? Okay. Well, listen, I'm glad you called. I got a break here, Lee. I hope you'll call again, okay?
Take care, man.
Yeah, please stay in touch.
Oh, well.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. Sue sent me an email, and the subject line says, "Of course there would be a terrorist attack. Would God lie to Pat Robertson?" And in the email, she says, "I know what you mean about trying not to think about it. Perhaps he misunderstood, and it'll just be a terrier attack." Sue, the treatment of the United States military by the Bush crime family is beyond appalling. And a half-witted caller from North Carolina the other night trying to make the point that nobody was drafted into the current military. And I had to get him off the phone before pointing out, as some of our emailers did subsequent to the call, that of course there's a draft. It's a backdoor draft. People are not allowed to leave the military, even after they have served whatever time they contracted for. But Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and the rest of these people have just, all of whom were cowards, none of whom served their country. Oh, I know, Cheney, Rumsfeld was, he had some kind of a desk job when he was in, what was he in, the Navy, the Air Force, the Boy Scouts, I don't know what he was in, but they're all cowards. Every single one of them. But they have totally screwed up the military, its traditions, whatever honor it has left. The mismanagement of everything the Bush crime family touches, whether it is the Mississippi Gulf Coast, it doesn't make any difference what it is. Every single thing these rat bastards touch, I'm sorry, Samantha, they corrupt, destroy, screw up, break, confound, confuse. Now there's this. This is from The Guardian of the UK, from tomorrow's edition. The Army said Friday, this is the American Army, it's in The Guardian. This is the Associated Press military writer. The Army said Friday it would apologize to the families of about 275 officers killed or wounded in action who were mistakenly sent letters urging them to return to active duty. Jesus, God. The letters were sent a few days after Christmas to more than 5,100 Army officers who had recently left the service. Included were letters to about 75 officers killed in action. The Army said in a brief news release issued Friday night, quote, "Army personnel officials are contacting those officers' families now to personally apologize for erroneously sending the letters," end quote. The Army did not say how or when the mistake was discovered. It said the database normally used for such correspondence with former officers had been, quote, "thoroughly reviewed," end quote, to remove the names of wounded or dead soldiers. The Army statement added, quote, "but an earlier list was used inadvertently for the December mailings," end quote. And the Army is apologizing to those officers and families affected and, quote, regrets any confusion, end quote. Jesus, God. Sending letters to officers killed in action. 75. There's no end to this. There is no end to this. This was posted at Democratic Underground and emailed to me by PAB, P-A-B. The guy has been coming here for years, customer of mine. I think the fact that our military discount lets him and his son get in for the same price he would pay for himself across town has something to do with it. I've gotten to know this guy very well over the years. Whenever he's on leave or between rotations, he makes sure to come in with his three-year-old son to see whatever's playing. He's done two tours in Afghanistan and just got sent back from one in Iraq with health conditions. Every time I heard about an American getting killed over there, I prayed it wasn't him. I haven't had the agony some out here have had with losing people they knew or who were close to them. Yet today, having seen what the war has made of this man, I wonder if those whose friends were killed weren't the lucky ones. This man has been reduced to a shell of his former self, both in body and in spirit. Throughout his time here, at least when I could see him in the lobby, he was gasping for air. The VA is trying to say that it wasn't breathing toxic smoke and depleted uranium that have given this 33-year-old man the lungs of a 50-year-old. Nah, just that he let himself get out of shape. This man, as far as fitness goes, has always been your stereotypical Marine, built like a brick outhouse. Even after not being able to work out daily for the last couple of months due to an inability to breathe, he's still well-toned. Besides, letting yourself get out of shape doesn't result in large amounts of scar tissue in your lungs. This is the first time the claims I've heard about the government giving Iraq war veterans the shaft on health care and benefits have a human face put on them for me, and it's not one that's pretty to look at. Then it struck me. What is this man going to do now? All he's ever known is being a Marine. He spent his entire adult life in service to his country and has had very little training in any civilian field. Most manual labor is going to be out of the question for him due to his vastly diminished lung capacity, and there isn't much aid to help him go back to school and learn the skills to get a really well-paying job. We keep hearing about the 3,006, and counting, men and women killed in this war, but what that number doesn't reflect is the thousands upon thousands like this man who aren't dead, but will never again live the lives they left behind. These are the walking dead, at least among those who still have their legs, whose livelihoods have been ripped away from them due to this pointless, unwinnable war of choice. 3,006 dead is only the beginning of the story, even if, please God, no other Americans are killed in Iraq. This stupid war has put the best and the brightest of an entire generation into a meat grinder for no good reason. We have a whole generation of servicemen and women who have been crippled to some degree in the name of George Bush's Oedipal desires, both physically, like my customer, and mentally. Whereas with Vietnam, we won't truly see the effects of post-traumatic stress disorder for years, where it concerns the Iraq vets. Worst of all, these men and women are going to need to be cared for, to varying degrees, for the rest of their lives. We need to ensure that they receive adequate care to keep their health from deteriorating further. We need to pay for their education, training, and therapy to become fully functioning members of society. We owe them at least that much. You can't pull yourself up by your bootstraps if you have no arms. But where are we going to find the money to do this? Sadly, Bush and his cohorts don't want to call for any sacrifice to help these brave Americans who have already sacrificed more than we ever had the right to ask of them. What more can I say? I admire this man's sacrifice, but I can't help but think that it was a needless sacrifice. This man's health and livelihood were ripped away from him. And what did our nation get in return? What great prize did he purchase with his lungs? What benefit did America gain from the man whose legs were blown off by IEDs? What noble cause was served by any sacrifice any American has given in Iraq? I have a hard time justifying what has been done to these men and women. So every time you hear about what's going on in Iraq and you hear stay the course or surge, remember that the death toll is only the tip of the iceberg. More people have given their livelihoods, if not their lives, for this war of choice than the statistics suggest. Yeah. Yeah, we don't talk about that. We don't talk about that, especially not in Bush's America. I want to thank these soldiers and Marines here and their families. You know, every time I have to hug a mom because her son is dead, or comfort a little kid because her dad is dead, or talk to a dad because her daughter died, you know, that hurts. I'm here to tell you, that hurts. You know, I watch this on the TV screens, and I know there's people dying over there. White people, our people, and some black people, too. But, you know, there are people. It really hurts. But I got to go now. I've got to go ride my bike.
What have I become? My sweetest friend. Everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all.
I understand the anguish that some feel about the death that takes place. Well, I grieve for every death.
Yeah, okay, George. Yeah, we got a couple of quick emails about that little tune, that uplifting, bright, sunny song that Kathy was playing on the way out to that last spot set. It's Johnny Cash. Play it again. Go ahead, play it again.
Myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole, the old familiar sting. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything.
Okay.
What have I become? My sweetest friend. Everyone I know goes away in.
When was that released?
I wear this.
Now you know why. Now you know why Rehnquist took the pills.
I know. My
upon
God.
My liar's chair, full of broken thoughts.
Okay. All right. You're going to have to stop it, or there's going to be. You're going to have to call 911 to the studio here. All right. All right. Good God. I I'm a Johnny Cash fan. I don't think I've ever heard that. Where did you get that?
From the Suicide Files. No, actually, I think it was called, what was the album? A Man Comes Back, or The Man Came Around, or something.
Good
like that.
Good Lord. I bet Billy Shears would know where that comes from. I've never, I've not heard that. Oh, whew. Obviously, it's about a heroin junkie, but...
The Man Comes Around.
The Man Comes Around is... okay. Yeah, heroin is called The Man. Cocaine was called The Girl. Okay. Whew. Lord have mercy, Kathy. That's got to be one of the most depressing songs I've ever heard. 24 past the hour. Let's go back to your phone calls quickly. Sarge is calling. Hey, Sarge.
Oh, boy, after that.
I know. Oh, have you ever heard that?
No, but doggone. Phew. I mean, what I was going to talk about, sad enough. Throw that in there in the mix, and wow, just, you know, it just makes you say, boy, Cassie and Samantha, y'all hurry up and grow up, children. We need y'all so bad.
Well, I know what you mean. That's one thing about listening to this program, and I say that from my point of view, too, because, hell, I never know what's going to happen on these programs. We can be flying high one minute and the next minute just have everybody sobbing in their soup. But anyway, that's not why you called. What's up?
Yes. Well, first, some good news. They had or were supposed to have the housewarming for Lee Roy Johnson tonight.
Oh, that's good. Now, this is the man whose daughter or whose
two children, grandchildren that perished in the fire.
That's right. Oh.
And he's might be on the Truth to Power Hour tomorrow at 3 o'clock Central Time.
Uh-huh.
I understand that Jim Yancey's going to be on it, and Jim told me that he's going to try and have Leroy on so people can hear, let Leroy say thank you to everybody. And so I think that would be pretty nice. So if anybody's around the flagship station for Nova M, tune in tomorrow. You'll be glad you did, because the man is just, we've done a good thing there.
All right, now this is on KPHX out of Phoenix, and people can listen via the Internet, right?
Yeah, they can go in via the Nova M website.
Right.
And they can listen to it.
Hey, hold on a second, Sarge. I got to do a break here. Hold on a minute. Okay, we'll be back in a second. This is Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. No more sad Johnny Cash, I promise. Okay, we'll have some sad Pink Floyd. Just a word that we all must share. It's not enough just to stand and stare. Is it only a dream that there'll be no more time?
I think we are welcomed, but it was not a peaceful welcome.
Twenty-five before the hour. Well, don't I feel like the most musically ignorant person in the world? Don and Jay and Billy and Ron and PBS and Jason and Jen and Wiley and Lois, and the list goes on and on and on of the emails I just got about the Trent Reznor song, Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails, and Johnny, who wrote that, and Johnny Cash recorded it. Not very long before Cash passed away. It was after his wife June Carter Cash died, months before he died. And SHP wrote also. All you folks who wrote, thank you. The video, it says here, is incredibly powerful and encapsulates the agony of a man who has lost everything in his life and looking death in the face. I had no idea. The Nine Inch Nails thing kind of blew right by me. Obviously, it's not my generation's music, duh. But, you know, having Chris in the house all those years, Chris is now 28, he tried to get me to listen to some of the interesting music in the 90s, and late 80s, 90, through the 90s, and a lot of it I just happened to miss. But anyway, thanks to everybody who wrote in about that. What a song. Joe in Larchmont, New York. Who else? Roger in Brooklyn. It's just a really sad song. Donald in Augusta, Georgia, one of our regulars, writes in about the story of the letters being mailed to the dead and wounded soldiers. Don writes, in relation to that story, does this not beg the question, do we really know how many military personnel have died and are wounded in this illegal criminal war? Can we really trust this lying, evil bunch of cowardly killers in the Bush administration? My one wish, Donald writes, for the new year is to see justice come to those soldiers paying the price and the American people, and that is to see this entire gang of cowards in front of the International Criminal Court by the end of 2007 facing war crimes charges. Yeah, I hear you, Donald. All right, Sarge is holding on. Back to Sarge. Now, now it's going to be on the what is the program on KPHX?
Truth to Power Hour.
Truth to Power Hour, that's right.
If that the commercial ran during the break. About.
Right.
But what I really wanted to talk about, too, Beck, Glenn Beck.
Oh, God, I hate this guy.
I do, too, man. You know, you were talking one time about having a loofah battle with Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Well, can Beck and I headline that card?
Sure.
After what he wrote, after what he did yesterday, I would love to do something to this man. He was talking with a Hurricane Center expert, Chris Lancey, and Lancey was saying that if a major hurricane hit in New York City, what it would do, and it was talking about it flood Long Island and the tunnels, and there'd be surges of 20, 25 foot, and Beck pops up and says, actually, that would clean the streets, and it might not be bad.
Jesus, God. Beck, you know, I don't understand what CNN headlines, I mean, what's their point in hiring this pig and giving him a program? I don't quite get this. And yet, CNN headlines or CNN itself, the closest thing they have to a liberal or even a progressive is Jack
Cafferty.
Yeah, Jack Cafferty, who by the way, is really, really, really been getting intense lately with his disgust and contempt for this filthy administration. But, yeah, I agree with you. That
Hey, look, Mike, let me tell you something, man. I heard this, and I was on air when I heard it. I was talking to Bob Kincaid on his show.
Uh-huh.
And, man, I was glad I was on the internet radio and not on landline because I lost it. Because the thing that kept popping through my mind when Bob told me that was I kept picturing those two poor children of Mr. Johnson's as the fire consumed them and as they yelled and they screamed and they hollered in pain and agony. Mr. Beck, why don't you jump in that fire?
Yeah, I know.
By the way, Cassie wanted me to tell you that she's going to have a website up Monday for her Texas contribution to our project. John Fox, the Pat on Radio Network, has donated her some space on his website, so she wanted me to let you know that she's going to have it up.
Well, that's great.
Mike, thank you so much, and we kicked off our fundraiser today. It was talked about on Dr. Mike's show, and
say again where people go. JC, go to the
okay,
Jackson.
Well, they can go to my site, unreportednews.net.
Okay, unreportednews.net, and all the information.
And everything's
right
on there.
Right, that sounds good. All right, thanks, Sarge.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, stay in touch, pal. Stay in touch. I got an email from Cassie today, a copy of an email that she sent to Sarge. She said she normally would get 35, 36 hits and after on her website, and after being on the program the other night, she got 680. That's great. I really do think we ought to respond to this one, what Sarge is doing and what Jim Yancey and 15-year-old Cassie and everybody who's trying to do something about. I realize that the problem is way too big. I know that. I know that. It takes federal government. It takes foreign aid. Didn't Hugo Chavez offer some kind of financial aid to the United States after the damage was done by Hurricane Katrina? And didn't the Bush crime family more or less tell him to go to hell? All right, back to your phone calls. Scott is calling from Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Scott.
Yeah, I was just thinking when you were talking about Glenn Beck or Glenn Dreck, as like to.
Oh, he's awful. What a.
I'm ashamed to say that actually he comes from not that far from where I live. He comes about 80 miles north or so where I'm from up here. But anyway, what I wanted to talk about was the Pelosi thing, or that letter that you read a little bit earlier, and that was one of the reasons, one of my reasons for impeachment, one of them, at least, because I happened to be the caller that you were talking to that night when you were reading the letter from the article that John Dean had wrote.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
About that night, and I told you that I had spoken with him, too, and at the time that he had spoken with me.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't say impeachment was off the table. He just said it wasn't likely to happen. But, you know, with all due respect, you know, his background isn't so.
I know. Obviously John Dean had some sort of.
And he did serve time in prison.
He did.
Well,
and he had his epiphany, and I think he understands what he was involved in. And at least you have to, I always gave him a little bit of credit because he did blow the whistle on those bastards. If John Dean had not testified the way he testified, I'll never forget hours of testimony from Dean and seeing his wife sitting behind him. What was her name? Maureen. Mo Dean sitting behind him in that, Senate testimony room where John Dean sat there and went on and on and on, and America's collective jaw just dropped about what he was talking about.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, and I really don't care about whether or not it's so-called is going to be an inconvenience for the country. I mean, you know, people have no business whining about this at all. What about the inconvenience that you caused to Iraqis, or this administration has done, that the 650,000 plus that are dead and the 200 million that have had to flee the country, and
that's
the thousands of soldiers who have died and the families who have been affected, not to mention all the war relations around the world and stuff. So, you know, inconvenience, that's just too bad.
Right.
Suffer through it, live through it. They can do more than one thing.
Well, I remember there was no hesitation on the part of these half-witted Republicans to impeach Bill Clinton, because he lied about a semi-affair. It wasn't even an affair. There was no worry about the business of government proceeding then. But I have such a deep and abiding hatred for anything that even has a smell of it, of a Republican or a conservative. So I certainly agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, and that's just one. Oh, and by the way, I see that you got my email that I sent you about the Ann Coulter Brainless cartoon. I don't know if you had a chance to check it out or not. The Ann Coulter Brainless cartoon.
Yes, I did. I did. Thank you.
The Jersey Girl.
right. Thank you. I appreciate it. Scott, there's the music. I got a boogie. Thanks a lot, pal.
Okay.
All right, stay in touch. Stay in touch. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. 10 before the hour. Thanks to the gang. Ian Huff, Chris in Minnesota, Mark Marshall, Ben Birch, and our executive producer, Catherine Bay. Names don't change. When we worked at Air America, we had like different people, you know, come in and come out, especially working on the engineering side.
A lot of them were CEOs.
Right. Yeah.
Those changed all the time.
But there's a comfort in stability, right?
There's a comfort in regular paychecks, too.
Well, that too. But I have to say, you and I have been doing this together long enough now, Kathy, and of course I've been doing it for 25 years, that considering the fact that there's about 1,500 miles or more between our studio and Ian's outpost in Phoenix, and the fact that this program goes over so flawlessly speaks volumes about Ian Huff and his abilities as Nova M and KPHX's engineer, producer-engineer. It really does. Really does. Usually when we have a screw-up on this program, it has to do with ISDN lines or phone companies or, well, that's the same thing, or, you know, lightning strikes or what have you. Back to your calls. Brett is calling from Margate, Florida. Hey, Brett.
Mike.
Hey.
Great to have you back in South Florida.
Yes, it is. WINZ, bless their hearts.
We kick Bush ass down here regularly.
Yeah, you do.
I just want to say that after watching that dog and pony show that Colin Powell put on in front of the UN to justify the war in Iraq, are these guys going to use the same tactics to justify a strike on Iran?
Probably similar, if it comes. I can't believe that it's going to happen, although I'm having people email me and say, yeah, it is, and no less than Scott Ritter and a few other people are saying preparations are being made, but I can't get my mind around it, to tell you the truth, Brett, that we would do this again.
Well, you know, they like to put up these revenge figures for the American people to look at. You know, the war in Afghanistan wasn't enough. You know, they had to put up a guy everybody knew, Saddam Hussein. And I guess the pros outweighed the cons as far as launching an invasion in that country.
Right.
I mean, everybody knows the name Saddam Hussein. Who can name an Afghani?
That's
true.
I
guess it fulfilled the bloodlust that the country was ramped up into feeling after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for the director of security, Condoleezza Rice, who was seeing mushroom clouds in L.A., to justify that war, she gets a big promotion to Secretary of State.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, how can this woman have any credibility anywhere after that?
Well, this is the way it works, though. In Bush world, the more you fail, the more your chances of getting a huge payoff. Look at this guy, Nardelli, who is the former CEO here of Home Depot, which happens to be based here in Atlanta. This guy drives the stock price of this is just an example, drives down the stock price of Home Depot stock by about 17%. And when the board of directors finally decides to fire the son of a bitch, they give him a $210 million severance package. Bush deals with people who participated in his lies and deceptions, and they get medals of freedom. I mean, it's insane. It's insane. But it's so Republican. It is so Republican.
Talk about devaluing a medal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Who came before.
Yeah. But don't forget now, the Republican Party, that's the party of, you know, get off your ass and go to work. And, you know, everybody, you know, no welfare. Let's, you know, let's be adults here. None of this whiny ass mommy state. You know, let's everybody get out here and go to work. All you have to do is rape, loot, and pillage, and you'll be just fine. God, I hate these people. I can't tell you, Brett, how much I hate them. But anyway, listen, I got to move on. Thanks.
I get the message.
I appreciate you checking in. Thanks, Brett. Where are we? Lee is calling from Virginia. Lee, we got about a minute.
Hi.
Hi, Lee.
Well, anyway, number one, I sort of hate the Republicans, too. Second, the kid that you talked to was really great.
Samantha?
And third, yeah. And third, this is this last election,
yeah.
I got two people to vote for the first time in Northern Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And when you talk about the razor-thin margin that we took the Senate, the fact that I got two people who never voted before.
It was you who did it.
No, it counts for every vote count.
No, I know what you mean. It does. Every vote does count, provided the votes are counted.
I know, and it shows that it works sometimes.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, Lee, thanks. Thanks for checking in, pal. I appreciate it. Take care. We're just flat out of time. We'll talk again. Oh, no. You're not going to close with this, are you? Nine Inch Nails and David Bowie doing Hurt. Oh, can't we close with I'm Going Straight to Hell? I just can't do this. I really can't. I'll wind up having two Jack Blacks tonight rather than one. Ah, there we go. Thanks for participating in the program this week. However you did that, I do appreciate it. Take care, all right? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NoVam Radio. Oh, and I completely forgot last week. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.